It's hopeless asking you anything.
Not if you ask the right questions.
How do I get into Zombie Takeout?
Ah, now that's more like it. You gets in here. Hello and welcome to episode 420 of Zombie Takeout. I am so glad we didn't realize 420 was coming up and think of some ridiculous joke to do.
Did we already do Reefer Madness?
I think we did. Because this one worked out so much better for it.
Yeah, it did.
But before we get to this,
for some.
Before we get to this week's movie, we've got some listeners submitted. This one goes back to our Carousel review. I normally don't go that far back with listener submitted, but this one's kind of special. It's from Steve Rudzinski on YouTube. Steve Rudzinski is the director of Carousel. He said, "This was a joy to listen to. It really means so much to hear folks who get it in every way. So glad you enjoyed the film so much, all of you. But if you haven't seen it, we are trying to make part two." They funded Carousel 2 on Kickstarter. I chipped in like $10 right after I edited that episode, last week's episode, and they had already passed the goal.
Great. I think definitely can't wait for a sequel to that.
Yeah. Steve Rudzinski mentioned, I think it was on Twitter, that they'll be filming it next year. Obviously no word on the release because they just filmed it and we're in the middle of a pandemic, so hopefully filming will happen next year.
And I mean, also, how many more ways could that horse possibly kill people? Is just, I don't know.
I mean, it's got to go to space at some point.
That's true. That's usually part three, isn't it?
Well, that's true. Yeah. They could skip part two, you know, pull a movie I'm going to be referencing later tonight. We've also got some listeners submitted from Facebook. This is from Diana Stevens in reference to last week's film, Lady Hawk. She said, that was one of my favorites in its day. It did not hold up to the test of time for the most part, but it was fun when it came out.
Yeah, but I don't think I even mentioned in last week's episode we reviewed it. Yeah, I liked it as a kid when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
I totally had I taped it off of like Showtime or something, but you know, I watched it a few times as a kid.
Mm.
That's and because we were starving for good fantasy entertainment, you know.
I suspect that's also something a lot of people would say about this week's film, which is from 1986, Labyrinth. Of course, that brings us to the impromptu plot summary, sponsored by the 80s. It all seemed like a good idea at the time.
And also brought to you by Jareth the Goblin King, responsible for dozens of anime characters throughout
and,
the years.
And literally every anime vampire, and I say that as an anime geek.
Yeah, I'm not even an anime geek, and I just kind of looked at it and I'm like, this is exactly what they fucking did.
Yeah.
Every time. All right. So we have a bratty ass girl who just doesn't give a fuck about anything. But, you know, I guess what the writers are going, like, teenagers, what are you going to do about them, huh?
And, take that cliche scene where you know, the daughter or son, usually daughter, is complaining about how her parents never let her do anything and, you know, she always has to watch her kid. Turn that up to 11 on the cliches, and that's the beginning of this movie.
Yeah. It's so bad that she actually wishes her baby brother away.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, damn, that's cold. cold. And, of course, the goblins are awaiting in anticipation for her to say the correct words. And she does. It's not even just a throwaway thing. She builds to it and then fucking says it.
She doesn't say it quite right a few times and they're all anxious for her to say it right, and then I got the impression they kind of gave fed the line to her.
Right. Wait for it. And Well, she does say it, and then her baby brother just poof disappears. Then she realizes, what have I done? And that begins her quest to get him back. Now, she's being held by I was gonna say the Goblin King, but fuck, man, it's just David Bowie.
Yeah, David Bowie doing a Dr. Frankenfutter impression.
You kind of get the feeling that it's David Bowie just being David Bowie.
There's a lot of Frankenfutter, especially in that
Yeah,
first
you're
scene.
right. You're right. And especially like the ballroom scene, that was just like straight out of my unconventional conventionalist scene, or the time warp. And so he's of course not playing fair. He throws everything at her to not get the child back and to make this movie as long as possible. And he succeeds. He succeeds. He gets it up to a good hour and 50
40,
minutes,
hour
or
40,
hour
just
40. Yeah,
over.
hour 40. hooray! So right, she along the way she meets some people who are they are in the way. They're guardians of the labyrinth, but she winds up converting them into being her own friends, and some of them even betray her, but they still bring them back in as friends and forgive them in the end.
He just keeps getting chance after chance.
And it eventually, of course, leads to this big outright battle, which kind of made Baron Munchausen's battle scene look like Saving Private
Yeah.
Ryan.
Now, bear in mind that scene was almost all Muppets, though.
Yes.
That's kind of the only saving grace of the film is all the Muppets to me.
Right, and so she gets to an M.C. Escher painting, where they're keeping the child, and
Bought it a half a fucking brain. I love Escher.
that was my idea for Purgatory, remember? Or one of the levels of Purgatory, but and then hilarity and a weird ass scene ensues.
Now, it says before I get to my notes, it says that on in the opening credits that Terry Jones wrote the screenplay. He wrote the first draft of the screenplay.
Ah, okay. That explains a lot because you can hear a lot of Jones in it. And I perked up. I was like, oh my God, this has to be a slam dunk when you're talking about Jim Henson working with, Terry Jones.
Produced by Lucas. And he's, I mean, you can quibble about his directing, but he's a great producer. But yeah, a lot of people got to the script after that, and
I think the story in general is just flawed from the beginning, though, honestly.
And it opens with, well, I gotta ask, 'cause you're the Bowie fan between the two of us.
Yeah.
I'm guessing this was during Bowie's sellout period.
I have my notes. This is what he referred to as his Phil Collins years.
Okay.
Like, he himself calls it that.
Wow. And it's interesting that you should mention Collins specifically because I loved the gated reverb on the drums in the opening song. And we've got all this dated CGI in the opening credits. And it
Well, the song credits, I mean, all right. It's not as bad as what we went through last week, those opening credits. However, when they start playing the same song again
Yeah, the opening theme
after the
song
credits,
replays like four times in the movie, and it's
but they
not a.
do it like right after they played it the first time. It's kind of like, wait, did we just do this?
It's not a bad song, but I mean, it's mid-80s Bowie.
Yeah.
It's sellout period Bowie, so.
Well, this is why growing up I wasn't a Bowie fan as a kid. This is what I thought of Bowie, that kind of music. But it was kind of like, oh, he's in Labyrinth, he's in, it's kind of just a joke. I had no idea until later about his back catalog.
It does start with a nice head fake, because as soon as we get through that horrible credit sequence, we have Jennifer Connelly in this medieval gown, speaking this kind of Shakespeareanish dialogue, And okay, I'm thinking, because I've never seen it before, maybe it's all set in this fantasy world.
Right.
And then we find out, no, she's just practicing for a play or something.
And it made the music actually make sense,
Yeah.
because at first it was kind of like, why are they doing this kind of music for like what's not our world? And it turns out, oh, it is. So maybe they should have began it with a more medieval, Renaissance festival kind of sounding
Yeah.
music in the opening credits,
Would have sold that
and
head fake a bit
then
better.
played Bowie,
Right.
when it's like, oh, wait a minute, we're in
Yeah. That would
1986.
have been better.
Yeah.
And I know Jennifer Connelly ultimately became a very talented actress, but damn, she was bad at this point.
She was like 15,
She was
though.
14. I checked. She,
14.
when they filmed this. So, I can't give her too much
Yeah.
for it, but she was hard to watch.
Well, I think the character was just hard to watch, honestly,
Betcha.
more than anything else,
Yeah.
because it was just an awful character.
Right.
Awful, awful.
The
And even like the redemption at the end was just kind of like, not even like a being a human to her parents, like, hey, how was the night out or whatever,
Yeah, that was barely a redemption arc, and if anything,
Exactly. It was kind of like an, oh, she's putting her toys away. Good. Oh, let's go play with the goblins. What?
yeah, but the goblin chorus at the beginning was really the only thing making it watchable when they were kind of egging her on to say the words just right.
Yeah.
I did get a kick out of that, and generally, for the most part, with one glaring exception, I enjoyed all of the Muppets in the movie.
I think, I mean, some Muppets are more interesting than others. Like the Fire Gang Muppets were interesting.
They were the glaring exception. That was intolerable, but it was also a musical number. So.
Right. There's some weird effects in there too, and like just them dancing in this thing with flying heads and.
And I'm just going to call myself out on it right now. I'm going to be using the word intolerable a lot during this review. When the kid was taken, that was very nicely timed because she walks out after saying the words, and he stopped crying at just the perfect moment, just added some
Right.
nice suspense.
Right. Like 14 minutes in, and it's when she begins the quest, and I'm pretty much like, this is just going to be a fantasy in the end, isn't it? Expecting that. And then 22 minutes in, I was kind of wishing the Goblin King would come and take me.
His entrance was nicely done when he suddenly shows up at her window with the what they call it, gravity juggling, I think. Those little plastic clear balls that you
Oh,
manipulate.
right.
Contact juggling, that's what it is. I have one of them around here. I tried to learn it for about a week and lost interest. And although the scene where he turned the ball into the snake was just hilarious because it was so like cheesy 80s CG.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
And then they're in her room and suddenly they're teleported out of the house into the labyrinth. It just they didn't even make a production of it.
No,
It was
it's
bizarre.
only a model.
Yeah,
This
and the
needed a bit
outside.
more Holy Grail to it.
Yeah, the outside of the labyrinth, I swear, looked like an old Star Trek TOS series set.
No, they never. That was too advanced for that. You're forgetting
Well, yeah, true.
how primitive the original series was.
I also did not need to see a Muppet pissing. When she comes across Hoggle, the one who betrays her like five times, but she still forgives him, he's pissing into this pond.
Well, if you remember, like the Muppets, I think he originally wanted to do an adult show, which
And
is kind of why I'm surprised they haven't just given them a late night talk show to
yeah.
do.
And to be fair, the original Muppet Show was not as for kids as people like to think it was. It was
I'm
kind
kind
of
of
geared for everybody.
true.
There's
Sure,
stuff
I
in
just
there
happened
for
to have been
adults.
a kid and I was into it. Yeah, we just actually in our backyard movie series, we just watched the latest Muppet movie, which is interesting because I don't even think I realized that this was a Henson movie.
I haven't seen any of the recent ones. Are they decent?
This is the one with Jason Segel from like I think just a few years ago.
Yeah.
And yeah, it was pretty damn
Oh,
good.
I'll have to check them out. Because I think, yeah, they're all on D Plus, so I'll check them out. But Hoggle, this Muppet, completely outacts Jennifer Connelly. And then she starts down the labyrinth, and we get this Miami Vice music. This is a case where they went with current pop music in a fantasy movie, and okay, granted they have Bowie in the movie, but
Right.
his songs aside, they did not need current pop music. It just doesn't work with that environment.
Right. I mean, this, there's just no justice in the world because Bowie originally wanted to do, back in the 70s, wanted to do a musical version of 1984 and it became Diamond Dogs. And, because of Orwell's widow, he couldn't. And then he winds up, this is the musical he winds up getting to do.
And I
Seriously?
can't fault him because, Jim Henson movie in
Yeah.
86, who wouldn't do that? Who wouldn't jump at that chance? And then he's handed the script.
This really seemed like a slam dunk.
But as she's wandering through the maze, she happens upon this little worm Muppet who I swear they referenced in Thanksgiving 3.
Oh,
That little
that's a
character.
movie I wouldn't mind watching again.
Almost identical. I mean, it's been a few years. I watched the first one every Thanksgiving Eve. It's been a few years since I've seen three, but I swear they referenced that character almost verbatim in Thanksgiving 3.
I think you're right. That you mention it, I'm remembering the worm you're talking about from this, and then yeah, even like the accent,
Yeah.
I think was the same.
I wish I had seen this before Thanksgiving 3. I would have loved that more.
Yeah.
And the scenes with Bowie and the Muppets during the magic dance, it's like a bad Muppet show scene. I mean, I've heard magic dance referenced a lot. That opening line gets referenced because a lot of people I know love this movie and they get referenced it a lot and it was intolerable. Granted, neither of us is the target demo,
Very true.
Neither of us is a teenage girl in the 80s who has a thing for Bowie.
Right.
And I don't want to know about the biology of those two-headed Muppets behind the shield, because one head was above the shield and the other head was below it.
I thought that was an interesting scene. They're bickering
Yeah.
between each other.
Well, the bickering two heads thing has been done a billion times, and it always amuses me. But the
Yeah,
putting the
yeah.
heads in those places, assuming they're on one person, one being,
Right.
and if they're on two beings, where are the legs for the second one?
Well, the bickering between the dwarf and, those.
And then they explained the two guards riddle. One can only tell the truth, one can only lie.
Yeah.
I love that riddle. I love that they explained it. I have to give it another half brain for that. By the way, this was Jim Henson's last feature.
Wow, really?
And the poor reception contributed to a difficult period in his career.
Oh, yeah, that, 'cause yeah,
No.
this didn't gross well, if I
No.
remember right.
Also, the conceptual designs were by Brian Froud, who had worked with Henson on Dark Crystal.
Oh, so Brian Froud, that's the baby's father.
Okay, was it the actor who played the father? No, I think, if I recall correctly, Froud did a voice for one of the Muppets.
Oh, okay. Because,
Yeah.
like, Toby Froud is the full name of the baby.
Oh, okay.
And.
Oh, okay, so they named the family after the guy who came up with the designs. That makes sense.
And then the funny thing is, this baby, if you look at his IMDb, it's his only acting appearance.
Oh, you mean, okay, I'm finally understanding what you mean. The kid's
Right.
actual name is Toby Fraud.
But he grows up to be a special effects, artist
Okay, so it
himself.
probably is Brian Froud's kid. His
Right.
actual real life father is Brian Froud. Now I understand.
So yeah, he grows up and he's like worked on like King
Yeah,
Kong and
makes
stuff.
sense.
Yeah, like it does the effect.
His father is, a designer who's worked with Henson. Kid's got a leg up.
Yeah.
And if he's talented, then he's got a job in the industry.
But this was his only on-screen acting.
Yeah.
The crying in the camera, kind
Right.
of walking around the Escher painting.
And then she falls down this hole in the floor, and we have the helping hands scene. Bunch of hands reaching out, grabbing her as she falls. Again, Jennifer Connelly was 14 when they filmed this. So that was a little.
It's weird. They don't, it's suggestive without being too overly suggestive. It's strange.
Yeah, especially when we get to the ballroom scene. That got
Yeah.
just wrong. That was hard. It was difficult. Disturbing is the word I meant to say. That was
Not
disturbing.
intolerable.
But I'm torn because I love the Muppets in the film. But Connolly and the musical numbers are just horrible. And Bowie, when he's not singing, was okay. Another thing I liked, again, the Muppets, the little creatures that were biting Ludo when she first finds him, the Yeti.
Oh, yeah. And
And
what?
the whole slapstick in that scene was very Jones.
Now, a Ludo Sarah love story is one I mean, even you could have gotten behind that if they had actually gone there.
I mean, they kind of. There are some lines that suggest that the Hoggle, the little curmudgeon dwarf, has a crush on her. It's actually because he doesn't have any friends. It's a platonic thing.
Right.
But I even would have been okay with that because it's a fucking Muppet.
Oh, but let me tell you though, if they did a Hoggle Sarah Ludo love triangle, this would have been fucking on the rec list. I don't care about anybody else. If they went there, she's fine. I saw her first.
True. And then we get to the fucking Fire Gang. Bowie actually recorded that song, like his
Oh,
own
yeah.
version with his vocals.
What was the song anyway? I forget.
Oh, chill down with the chilly down with the Fire Gang or something.
Oh, Jesus, that's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just there's an interesting story that just got posted about Bowie that I heard on the Bennington show, and it's making its way around the internet. It's about a fireman who he pretty much outed Bowie about a lot of the stuff he was doing. He was cooking for this firehouse for years in New York City,
Oh,
like for
wow.
2 nights a week. I just kind of like took them all under his wing, like left stuff in his will for them and everything.
Wow. Nice.
But yeah, it's quite an interesting story. I don't want to get into like the details here, of course.
Back to the movie and the Fire Gang. I did enjoy seeing Sarah rip their heads off.
Yeah, that was an interesting scene.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Then we get to the Bog of Eternal Stench, which is just a big fart joke.
Yeah.
I did like the bridge guard fighting Ludo, though. Anytime the Muppets threw down, I was down for that.
Well, especially if you have a Muppet Black Knight as a
Yeah,
dog. I mean,
basically, yeah. And then the ballroom scene, again, disturbing. Although, I mean, if certain people are to be believed, Bowie and a 14-year-old, not, the first time.
No, not at all. Apparently the 70s were
But by the last half hour of the movie, I was actually even tired of the Muppets.
yeah, by the time they got to the hallway and the giant, I was pretty much like, oh, look, my phone.
The battle scene was fun, though. Yeah, I enjoyed
Yeah,
that.
the Fraggle Rock
Yeah.
summoning of
It's just a
the
nice big,
vultures.
it's a big battle scene that's all Muppets except for Jennifer Connelly hiding behind some stuff and probably Bowie walking through a couple of scenes. The Escher room loved that half a brain. And then when she realizes that the Goblin King has no power over her, she kind of dismisses him, but it's the way it's done, it's just this random combination of images that's just pure style over substance, like
Right.
ridiculously 80s.
They just 80s run amok.
Yeah. And then of course the redemption scene that was not a redemption scene at all.
Right. I
Because,
mean,
you know, she starts off kind of trying to redeem herself and then just decides she wants to play with her friends.
and at first I was kind of like, did this ruin the whole Kembellian hero's journey that they were building, which, ditching materialism, believing in others. And I guess the difference is in the end, instead of playing with toys, she actually was playing with friends.
Yeah, because she's kind of
But
a loner herself for the movie, most of the movie.
it also did mean growing up in
No,
the
no, no.
end. Like, what the fuck? That's what I'm like, my jaw just dropped. I'm like, wait, what? What is this?
I
A
mean,
goblin party? What?
normally I'd be down for subverting a hero's journey, but this just subverted it in the worst way possible.
I think it did. I think it was like, as if Frodo was just like, you know what? I'm just gonna fucking stay in my
Yeah.
hobbit hole.
Yeah.
Fuck those guys.
On to sequels and remakes.
Oh, do we have to?
Tokyo Pop published the four-volume comic sequel, Return to Labyrinth, between 2006 and 2010. In January 2016, it was announced that a sequel was in development, which screenwriter Nicole Perlman described as more of a spin-off in the same fictional universe. That could be interesting as long as it's not, you know, a musical, and you know, it's good. It could be good. The universe is interesting.
I don't know. The problem was, it was, the antagonist is all powerful until he's not,
Right.
and can just do anything, and until he can't, and the door is just, right in front of you. You just have to look at it for
Yeah,
it.
I think it's everybody who got to the script after Terry Jones.
Right. And Jones, you could still hear his voice and some of the, bantering, and it's the bickering and bantering is probably the strongest part of the movie. But I just can't see coming back to this, honestly. I mean,
I mean,
it
this
just isn't
movie
worth it.
is iconic to a certain segment of people. If you are in the
Right.
target demo, you love this movie. But it is very much a relic of its time.
Yes. And maybe even really hurt Bowie's career more, if I think about it, because think about this. Before this, Bowie had China Girl, and he had
Serious
Blue
Moonlight
Jean.
really wounded his career.
Well, no,
That
that
was
was
after this?
I think it was before this. I think
Yeah.
that was that, he was really big commercially before
Well,
this.
yeah.
And
Oh,
then,
go. I mean, artistically killed him, ruined his career, but yeah. Commercially, this
well,
year probably hurt him
I
too.
think he knew he was going to sell out, and he knew he wanted to make some money. So, he signed the big Sony deal and, wanted to live up to that. But then doing this after this commercially, I mean, you had Never Let Me Down Again, Day In, Day Out, just stuff that was not good.
He didn't really find his footing again in an interesting way until the 90s.
Wow, until Reeves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Tim
Came
Machine.
up to him, and
Right?
until
Which
Reeves
was
came up to
90s.
him backstage and said, "Stop doing this." And then they formed Tin Machine, and
Right.
he re resurrected his career.
Right. On to brains.
On to Brains.
Love the Muppets. Didn't like anything else. Loved a couple of references. Like I said, bought it a brain between them. I'm going 3.5.
Ah, man, this was tough to get through. I really thought I was going to enjoy this a hell of a lot more, but I'm going to. It's the Muppets are interesting, but they're just not even watchable, and throughout they're not enough to carry the movie, is what
Right.
it comes down to.
All right, and what have we learned?
Ah, it wasn't just the corridors that were endless, huh?
And I learned that not even Bowie and Muppets can make a musical enjoyable.
Yeah. Now, the Muppets had done the 1984 movie with them.
Oh, please, yes.
Sam the Eagle is Big Brother.
Oh, God. Yes, need that. Need Muppets 1984.
Yes.
That's it for Labyrinth. We're off next week. So until 2 weeks from now, when we'll be reviewing Sister Tempest, along with the short films Sweet Revenge and Here There Be Monsters, all of which were submitted to us via email by their respective filmmakers. That'll be fun.
Yeah,
Especially
that
since
looks.
Sister Tempest is directed by Joe Badon, who also did The God Inside My Ear, which we reviewed a few years ago, which we
Yeah,
both
that
liked.
looks so fucked up, and I can't wait to see it.
And it's got a great trailer. Until then, of course, always remember, never forget, wherever you go in life, there you are.
There you are.
I got a bunch of titles.
I got three.
they just kept coming. Most of them I came up with before I even watched the movie.
Oh, yeah.
Based on a music video by Tim Pope. Do you remember who Tim Pope is?
No.
Directed a shitload of videos in the 80s, most notably Magic by the Cars.
Okay.
The 80s, the movie. Rocks Ex Machina. The Muppets Take Mordor.
Wait, what was the one before that?
Rocks Ex Machina.
Rocks Ex Machina.
Because of the rocks that Ludo was able to move. That were
Maybe.
just a straight up deus ex machina.
It might combine one of our
Okay.
titles together, actually, but
Rock,
we'll see.
Rocks Ex Machina. The Muppets Take Mordor. Frankfurter Goes to Middle Earth. For Frankenfurter Goes to Middle Earth.
Well, damn, I have Rocky Horror Muppet Show.
Okay, we might have to pick there. This one I am not seriously suggesting. I at this point I just started riffing on Bowie titles. This one
Yeah.
I'm not seriously suggesting, but it cracks me the fuck up, so I have to say it. Mupper Jet City.
I don't know.
And this one I actually this is my favorite of them. Scary Muppets. But I don't know. Between our Rocky Horror references, I think.
I have well, this one might work better with an
Okay.
Australian accent. Maybe the Glam Star Ate Your Baby. Or let's see, a Fraggle Cock. But then I was thinking we could combine the two, Rocks Ex Machina,
Ooh,
or
or
the Rocky Horror Muppet Show.
show.